Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo and welcome to your match preview of Chelsea versus the champions, unfortunately, Liverpool on Sunday.
We're gonna have to start this again, Louis. We're not acknowledging them.
We have to acknowledge them. Are you one of those that turns around and says they don't actually deserve to win it, or like there's like nuances to it where they're not doing the job and other people aren't doing things, yada yada yada, etc., etc., etc.? Or are we just going to admit that Liverpool are the best team in the league and we're just going to leave it at that? I think we should just do that. Just admit it.
I mean, yeah, they finished first.
Yeah, so they're going to, and they have finished first. So yeah, that's that. Arsenal probably going to finish second. No changes there. But Chelsea are in the hunt for Champions League football. And after a massive result, thanks to Brentford, we actually are potentially more in the driving seat than we thought we might be. But we'll talk about that later on in the show, because obviously we do need to talk about other things as well. But before we get into the Mac, before we get into the Donk Report, before we get into anything else, there is a very, very important question I have for you, Dan. 100 men or one gorilla?
I've considered this quite extensively this week. This has kind of been the biggest question of the week. And I have to say, like, I've been quite surprised when I put polls in group chats how close it's been. Because here's my starting point. My original assumption was the gorilla's going to win because it's a gorilla. And no one like wants to get into a situation where they're face to face with a gorilla. But then the more I thought about it, I started to think, well, there are different strategies. And also the theoretical question is you haven't like specified who these 100 men are. We know what the gorilla is, but we don't know who the 100 men are. Right. And that's when I was starting to think, well, what if I could clone one man, you know, make 100 of one man? What if it's like, is this the 0-4-5 Chelsea team? Is this the cast of the Avengers, the cast of Friends? We need to know, is this 100 fan channel people? I have no idea.
People I'd quite happily like to send in.
Yeah, but like that's where the question was. But I also want to make it clear before we have this debate, the argument I've heard back several times is that, well, once the gorilla kills one guy, everyone's going to run off. That's in this experiment. That's not part of it. We're in this thought experiment. The man that gets killed first, that doesn't impact you're in this environment. It's a fight to the death. It's either, you know, it's like Squid Game, right? Like you could either get involved in the game or you're getting murdered.
Yeah, so, exactly.
There's no running away. There's no running away in this experiment. There's no running away. It's either I more and more think, well, my analysis would be I'd turn on the 99 men, turn heel, and then make friends with the gorilla. That would be just embracing my inner chaos. But if it was 99 Diego Costas and one Louis Benavente on his workout plan, then we're having a different conversation.
I'll be very honest, and I'm not in good way right now. I've had no carbs all week and it's absolutely killing me. Come in, family having like really nice garlic bread, all that sort of stuff. There's me, I have to just sit and eat meat and vegetables and that's it, and it's killing me inside every single part. So yeah, I think I'd stand a chance with 99 Diego Costas. I was thinking more just sending, you know, if put it this way, right, Bonnie Blue can handle 1,000 men at once, surely she could take on one gorilla. That's my thought process.
But this is another point. Like, what would be the strategy? Because I think, well, what if all the 100 men rushed a gorilla at once? Which, yeah, you're going to get some casualties, but will that be enough? Or, you know...
I mean, I think if you think about, right, you've got... Gorillas have stamina, obviously, more than humans, right? And they can lift a certain weight. I think it was like 14
I read like 800 kilograms.
800 kilograms. Okay. So no, 14 tons would be ridiculous. Just realize what I said then. That makes no sense. So yeah, basically if they can lift 800 kilograms, right? The average guy weighs what? 90 kilos, 85 kilos. So if you do that 100 times, Yeah, the average guy, because like they're gonna be 85 kilos, right? 90 kilos. So let's take the higher end, let's go 90 kilos. That's over a ton. So if everyone rushes at the same time, and you think realistically the first 10 are going to get completely just nailed, right? So that's a ton gone straight away. Yeah, a ton's gone straight away. So that's nearly 10 tons. I'm doing my maths here. This is going mad here. Right, 100 guys, 90 kilos, that is nearly 10 tons. So if 9 tons of men rush the gorilla at once, there is an opportunity. But realistically, how would you target that? Would it be like, okay, 10 guys are going to hold down his arms, 10 guys are going to hold down his legs, like each arm, each leg, how does that work?
If you've seen Infinity War, I think it's the strategy of how they nearly take down Thanos. You've got a kind of, someone's got, a bunch of guys got to go for both legs. You've got to go, you can't all rush him from the front. You've got to do like circle him and then go in. See, this is the great point. You know, one of the great points in the human category was like, well, one of the things that human have advantage is they can distract the gorilla, which I just thought like was hilarious. Like just like one guy just flailing his arms, like dancing in the background, trying to distract.
See, my favorite thing with that, distracting the gorilla, is the scene that kept coming up on my timeline from Family Guy when Lois said, tell about the dream that you had. It's like, well, I was in my house, but it wasn't my house. It's like seeing just imagining some bloke. So I've got a question for you, right? If you had to make your dream Premier League 11, is Ronaldo still in there or is Salah on the right wing? And yeah, this grill is like answering these questions, talking about how great Salah's been for a consistent period of time versus Ronaldo's one or two seasons. And then boom, everyone's got in. That's I think that is the best method, but I do think realistically the gorilla is going to fuck you up. Like you're going to lose 25% straight away. I said 10%, but I just think 10 guys out of 100, if you're rushing a gorilla, it just isn't going to happen. You're going to have more casualties.
Well, there also is the chance that the gorilla, we have a Scott Pilgrim ending where when Scott Pilgrim has to face his evil self at the end of the film, and you think there's going to be this big, sorry, spoilers, but you should have seen the greatest movie of all time by now. I'm sorry if you haven't seen it. That's not my fault. But at the end of Scott Pilgrim has to fight the bad version of himself, and you think there's going to be a big fight scene. And then they end up just like having a great chat with each other and agreeing to go and have pancakes with each other at some point. So maybe we don't know psychologically where this gorilla is coming from. Maybe this gorilla, just a chill guy, and maybe you could have a conversation with him. You can introduce him to all the different variations of like bananas you could have, but banana pancakes.
I'm about to have some protein pancakes tomorrow now.
Him to protein shakes.
Dan, stop talking about food.
I'm sorry.
This is not fair. I'm now just really fucking hungry and it's not fair. But anyway, we'll leave it at that. There's lots of ways you could take down a gorilla. Me and Dan seem to have figured out that there is a methodology to it. RIP Harambe is what I will say as well. Straight off of that. What a guy he was. And that's when the world went to shit, when that gorilla died. He was our, what is it they were called in Deadpool? Was it the anchor being? Harambe.
Yeah, anchor being.
Yeah, Harambe was the anchor being of our
Harambe died and then Trump became president.
Harambe died. Yeah.
I think it all happened like in the same year. So there is an argument that the timeline got messed up after that. Like imagine a timeline where Harambe survived.
I know, that's exactly it. Chelsea wouldn't have been bought out by Clear Lake Capital as well. So, you know, there is that. That'd have been nice. But anyway, we should probably focus on Chelsea after speaking about a gorilla for 9 minutes. That's probably something which we should get back onto. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, it's very important to go through everything that's happened in this week. And apart from gorillas, you obviously have to understand through the eyes of the Chelsea lens what has happened in your world. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Donk Report. You're going first, yeah? Are you going first or am I going first?
Staggered many on Wednesday when they announced a new front of shirt sponsor till the end of the season. Who knew that Mark Morrison would follow in the footsteps of Samsung and Yokohama?
In another blast from the past, Mikhailo Mudryk was spotted parking his custom BMW on a double yellow line on the King's Road. Incredibly, this is the closest Mudryk has ever been to becoming and looking like a Chelsea player. That's harsh.
Arsenal were mocked for their sorry excuse of a TIFO ahead of the PSG game, but to be fair, it was probably better than the alternative, an advert for the Beacon of Human Rights, Rwanda.
This sweet marked 20-year anniversary of Chelsea's iconic title win at Bolton in 2005. To mark the occasion, Gillette promoted luxury living in Dubai. Because when I think of Lampard rounding Laskalainen, I picture the Burj Khalifa and luxury apartments I can never afford.
And finally, Cole Palmer asked the major question that we've just spoken about that dominated world discourse. Who would win in a battle of 100 men versus one gorilla? Palmer baffled the club's social media guy when Palmer said simply, chips, and walked off.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's everything you need to know. That was the Donk Report. Perfect. Perfect. I love it. I love that. It's my favourite part of the show every single week. I can't live without it. I was gutted when we didn't do it last week. The writer's back off strike, but that's that.
Yeah, yeah. We sorted the striker dispute. We've got them a pay. You know, their pay dispute. It was all good. I think partly the gorilla, but you know, one gorilla versus 100 men was part of the negotiations, and that's what smoothed it over and brought back the Donk Report, along with Mikhailo Mudryk parking on a double yellow line in the King's Road near Pret.
So harsh. That is so harsh. I can't believe he's literally living through hell at the minute. And you've got, he's not close enough to be a Chelsea player.
It's not me. It's not me. It's the guys that blame the guys at the Donk Report. It's the Donk guys. They felt quite angry after their pay dispute. So I just take what they give me and put it on the show. It's not my fault.
Oh dear. Well, that's that. I mean, we should probably go straight through that, to be honest, and talk firstly about the shirt sponsor. I mean, I don't even know where to go with that. That's just one thing where I look at it and I go, okay, well, we're in this position. We've got four games left the Premier League season, plus two games in Europe, three games in Europe potentially. And we're going to get a sponsor for seven games. Does it even make any financial sense? Because I that's the one thing I was looking at people going, it was just free sponsorship money. I'm going, yeah, but by the time people they've printed the shirts, everything's rolled out, you're going to have the shirt sales. At that point, the shirt sales are almost null and void because at this point in the season, that's when the prices go down and they get slashed. So I wasn't sure where it was coming from. Then, obviously, it's come out that these guys obviously have built a Chelsea development in Dubai and it's all that sort of stuff. And they're going to potentially be involved in the new stadium development. So I'm just guessing it's a goodwill gesture.
So it is quite confusing. Yeah, I completely agree with you on the shirt thing because I've been told that the expectation is that the new shirt, as you'd probably suspect, is going to be launched for the Club World Cup, which is not that far away now. We're nearly a month out, so it's not long until that shirt comes round and it launches. So yeah, like if you're buying a new Chelsea shirt, like not even new, if you're buying the current Chelsea shirt at this point, I don't know why you would be. So yeah, as you said, very soon they'll be dropping those prices. So doesn't make sense on that aspect. But yeah, I mean, it reflects the massive failure in terms of a front of shirt sponsor. Like I'm wearing in, it's my Diego Costa, 19 Sams, it's Samsung. And yeah. I just, you can't get round the fact that this, we were not terribly run under the previous ownership. But literally, you never had a situation in the previous ownership when a Chelsea team walked onto the pitch without a sponsor on the front of their shirt. And that has happened now once for the opening few months of last season and basically almost the entirety of this season. So you can't, you know, brag about how commercially incredible you are and then have no front of shirt sponsor. Because this isn't by design. This isn't like Chelsea are you know, bucking the trend of major sponsors. And, you know, now we're not going to have a front of shirt sponsor, which I would support, but it's clearly not by design. It's by failure to secure a sponsorship. So we could, I've heard some people theorize that we could have basically a sponsor for this little period, a sponsor for the Club World Cup, and then a sponsor by the, you know, getting into the next season, which is a bit weird. So I don't know what you do if you're trying to buy the shirt because it becomes a thing. Do I wait if I'm buying the new shirt what sponsor do you like best? I think people should be given a selection of sponsors in the club shop. That'd be quite funny.
That would be good. I mean, one thing I will say is, as an avid shirt collector, that sometimes sponsors do make a shirt. And I think the best way that the shirt this season has been described is a cum rag, because that's exactly what it looks like. Apologies if you're listening to this in a car with children.
The PG version is it's a London bus seat. That's if you've been on any bus, any. I haven't seen buses like outside of London, but when I think of like a London bus, that's what I thought. It was like those really weird, or even on the tube, those designs on some of the seats.
I
mean, it is, for me, it is the worst Chelsea home shirt of all time by a country mile. It's not, I mean, it's not even close.
I think it's quite close between that and Frank Lampard's 1920 shirt. That shirt was disgusting. Nike have failed to produce a good Chelsea shirt in their entire time. And as I say, every single season, whenever they put their shirt out, if you guys want some help, because you clearly need it, from somebody who has been voted one of the best kit designers in non-league football, this guy, feel free to reach out, because I can actually help you. And I think from the league shirt that I've seen, it's better, but it's still crap. There's too much going on, but we'll talk about the shirt when it comes out. But back on topic, I mean, look, like, sponsors can make or break a shirt. And the fact that having a random sponsor from Dubai for 7 games actually makes this shirt more palatable says a lot. So, you know, I think realistically, it's going to be a shirt that goes down in Chelsea history for all the wrong reasons.
If we win the Europa Conference League, I guess that's probably the thing that they're thinking as a spot. If I'm a sponsor and I'm thinking, like, I could be, if things go very well on Sunday, I'm the sponsor on the front of the shirt for Chelsea's biggest Premier League win in how long? If Chelsea win on Sunday, that's the biggest Premier League win we've had in a very long time against a big rival. I could be on that shirt for the front of, you know, for the Europa Conference League final, and Chelsea win their first trophy under this ownership, the first trophy since 2022. So there's that incentive too. And as you say, there clearly is something more to it in terms of when you think about development and what it could mean for the future of the stadium, which, listen, it's when we shouldn't go into that, because that's a separate can of worms. But I do see the link.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. But we'll have to see as time goes on, to be honest, because I'm it's just tiring now, mate. I'm just like, I'm bored. Like, it's not even funny to take the piss and say it's like another loophole, because it is just another loophole they've exposed from their contacts, but are failing to make the most of for a 60 or 70 game season, which is just embarrassing. Like, to talk
I just say quickly on the kit, it just come to mind because I want to mention it, is that there's been this rumor for several years now about Jordan doing Chelsea stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's obviously on the condition, it seems to be on the condition, this is what like Footy Headlines, which is very reliable, and others, that it seems to be on the condition of Chelsea getting Champions League football. And I'm hopeful that's kind of the only way I could see Nike creating really good stuff that I think would speak to Chelsea fans, because I'm not entirely sure Jordan would get the, you know, I think what's hitting home, I think, for a lot of people right now, like when you see all the great stuff Adidas does, and it's really frustrating because Chelsea were with Adidas for an extended period of time, and Adidas with Arsenal, with Man United, they're releasing all this. I think Liverpool are about to go back to Adidas, if I remember right.
They are indeed.
So they do want to. So nostalgia is way more powerful than Jordan's right coming into a football club. Like, it's just, I know PSG have had that link for a long period of time, but if you're the average Chelsea fan, is going to rush to get a kit that looks like one of our more famous ones than they are a Jordan one. That's just my instinct. But maybe Jordan could do something more interesting.
See, I disagree.
Yeah, I don't know.
I disagree.
What about nostalgia?
Let me elaborate. I agree that nostalgia sells. I think that's clear, right? And I think for your average Chelsea fan, who is UK based, or might not be UK based, but has a grasp of Chelsea's history, which, by the way, we're going to talk about that. We spoke about it on the Final Score show, but I'm still seething about it, by the way. I think, yes, nostalgia would sell. I think if you base the kit on the 04-05 shirt, which, by the way, like 20 years, the fact that they didn't see that and go, that would have been a perfect time to maybe recreate something like that 20 years on, and a complete lack of understanding of history and just complete disregard to it, by the way, which is a recurring trend, not just in football, but throughout life now. People are just like either not caring, or they're not learning from it, or they're trying to erase it and do something different, right? The fact that that is still a thing absolutely just completely nullifies any point that that you could to get sell nostalgia. Now, it leans into now, if you go online, right, over the past 24 hours, so since Thursday, as we record this on Friday, The Overlap released a fantastic piece of content with Ruud Gullit talking about his career, and obviously something which is pertinent to Chelsea fans is his time at our club. And he was talking about how he met Todd Boehly. He didn't say when, which I think is important, because if it was right at the beginning, okay. If it was a year in, different conversation. He met Todd Boehly. Todd Boehly didn't know who he was. And we're now 3 years into a project where pretty much any semblance of Ken Bates, Ryan Abramovich, throughout the club, and we're not just talking on the pitch and in football, we're talking the marketing department, we're talking the ticket office, we're talking the fucking cleaners, like whoever it is, right? Any semblance of the previous Chelsea hierarchy and culture has completely gone. And you and I have spoken about it consistently throughout this season. We spoke about it consistently before we were doing the pod. It's important for any club to understand the culture and the DNA and build on it. Don't just tear it down to build something new. Build on what you have to implant what you want, which, by the way, I think would have seen people like you or I, who go to the ground every week, be far more nuanced. I think we're still nuanced in what we talk about, but we're jaded now from what we've seen. When I see people saying, Ruud Gullit's not important, I don't understand why he's there, and keep people saying it's not a big deal that, you know, what about what he's saying? Abramovich didn't know who he was when he first arrived. He didn't when he first arrived, but he actually made an effort to understand the culture. And because he didn't understand it, he put people in charge who did. Straight away, you can see a complete disregard, a complete nonsensical approach to this ownership and how they've been doing things. The shirt sponsor is just another example. When we're sitting and having the conversation, when people are like, oh, it looks nice though, doesn't it? Yeah, it does, but it doesn't cover up for the mistakes that have been made. If Chelsea got Air Jordan, unfortunately, I think the average consumer isn't going to look at it and be nostalgia sells. They're going to go, Chelsea got Air Jordan, because unfortunately, Chelsea fans look at Chelsea fans, consumers, and as a global fan base now, a lot of people don't learn or understand the culture completely, which is fine. I think that's why I'm not saying this is match going fans versus non-match going fans. I think that's embarrassing, and I think that's a really pointless argument that people make, and it just is extremely divisive. But you've got macro and micro economies. Unfortunately, a match going fan is a micro economy now. We're in the way, if anything. And to be honest, like, me and my dad were having this discussion the other day, and it's the first time I've heard him kind of scared about it. He's been a season ticket holder for nearly 40 years or over 40 years now. And he's worried that if Chelsea move ground, he's going to lose his season ticket, or the price is going to go up so high that he's not going to be able to afford it. And it's going to be a case of people that have been going for years and years and years that generate the atmosphere that this club has supposedly wanted to build around and talks about the culture, and they love putting all the videos in their marketing campaigns, is in the way. And people are saying that's unfortunately how a lot of people in the macro economy see Chelsea fans that go to games. We're in the way. We're not people that are important to the culture. And that's when things start dying and things don't get understood. And then all of a sudden it's just become a machine and that's it. And that's all it is. It's just the people on the pitch and the people in the stands are just there. And that's when the soul just completely goes. And unfortunately, I think, look, Air Jordan would be really cool. I think it would be great financially for the club. I think it's very important if they get someone like that. But people aren't going to look at it as nostalgia sales. People are going to look at it as Air Jordan. And that's kind of where the Rude Hoodlet conversation comes in, where I strongly advise people who listen to this pod, who maybe don't have the full grasp of it. Because by the way, look, me and Dan weren't born when Rude Hoodlet came to Chelsea. But we educated ourselves and we were educated and we took the opportunity to listen and understand. And then I think it's always important to evolve, right? Me and Dan, in terms of what we do things and how we do things, aren't traditional journalists, right? Or we, you know, in the frame of what people expected 20, 30 years ago. But we've taken and our education from those people in the journalism sector. I'm just using this as an example, journalism, and adapted it to what we have and our knowledge and how we can do things, and you carry on that legacy. Unfortunately, that legacy is getting lost behind things that look sexy in marketing campaigns, and the message isn't being considered. This is where I really feel that things could be done differently. And if Air Jordan come in and they do realize that, and it's not just an Air Jordan kit and it looks cool as an Air Jordan kit, but it leans into Chelsea's history, which Nike have a real opportunity to do something with that. That this whole 10 minutes would be completely redundant because they would have understood that. But unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people are going to look at it as that's really cool. That's a nod to 1997 when Chelsea won against Stuttgart. You know, that is going to be, that's a cool Air Jordan kit. And it'll be something pointless again, like this season's home shirt, where the spirals on the design were built to show the fire and burn of passion of London's youth. It's fucking bollocks. It's literally, that was literally, why does Curly's wife wear a red dress? That's all it was. She wore a red dress because she looked nice, not because she was promiscuous. It's like, yeah, I don't know. But I've kind of gone off on a tangent there, but I would implore people to go and look into your history. Watch that overlap episode, listen to the Blueprint podcast, by the way, which is a great and easy way to digest it all. Read some articles, speak to older Chelsea fans, engage those people which are in those communities, like me. Like I said on Final Score, you know, me Score, Rambles, you know, Dan as well. Like we'd be very happy to have those conversations with people. If, you know, whenever I've gone to the States and we've had conversations, people have said certain things which just completely don't make sense or completely redundant. You need to be able to say, well, okay, no, this is how this works, this is how this thinks, this is how this operates. And I think it's important to respect what's been, but put your own spin on it and understand it. That's how I've always lived the things that I've done, you know. And I think it's important that fans do that, and how Chelsea fans should approach that. Because saying Rude Hoodlet isn't important, and I'm not going to go into the history of it because we've done that already, and there's better places to do it, shows the complete lack of education, and it needs to happen. And that's my whole thing with the spiel of the kit. I just realised we spoke about that for 10 minutes. Dan, agree, disagree?
Just on the Rude Hoodlet thing, yeah. Like, the shame of it is actually the second part of the quote that's gone round when he talks about that is, I think, actually more valuable, because if you listen to what he says, the first part that's kind of gone viral and most people have picked up on, I'm not saying is irrelevant, is about Bowley, right, and him not knowing who he was. But then he went on to speak about club DNA and... Mm-hmm. You look at Liverpool, he brought up Arsenal, you know, and how he kind of referenced how important the coach was in that, kind of being a rallying kind of inspirational figure, which I think is something we've talked about quite consistently. And why I think this ownership has got wrong is not, it's what we spoke about last week. Like the I think the ownership maybe not appreciating that enough, like how important that is to to guide that project or whatever it is, or you know to get through maybe the problems behind the scenes. Is, you know, before Klopp arrived at Anfield, Liverpool fans didn't exactly love their ownership. It wasn't like everything was plain sailing. But they stumbled. It's probably unfair to say stumbled, but they got someone who clearly grasped what the club was and what fans wanted to see from their club, and it became a marriage, you know, made in heaven, right? Or hell for the rest of us, because it turned out to be a great success for them. The part about Bowley, right? Like, I just don't think it's that controversial. If you're spending the amount that you are to buy a football club, I just don't understand how it's unreasonable to expect someone to know the biggest names in a club's history that you're personally invested in. I just don't understand how that is a controversial expectation of an owner. It shouldn't be. Ruud Gullit is not some random guy. It's not, you're not asking someone to know who was the unused substitute in a game in 97 against Spurs. What you're asking for someone to understand is Ruud Gullit is not just a Chelsea, a famous name in Chelsea history. He's a famous name in football history. Like, it's this is not some small, irrelevant kind of, it's the word, I'm not going to use the word this week because I say it far too much, but it's the warping of stuff that's just so obvious that let's just have an honest conversation here. Like, you should know who that guy is, just like you should know who Frank Lampard is, just like you should know who Peter Osgood is when you're talking about Chelsea. And you do not have to have lived through these errors to understand it. I think as a supporter, if you're someone of our age who were blessed by the fact that we walked into an era of Chelsea that instantly became success, right? It was just win after win after win after win. But that, but I was lucky that I remember sitting at my grandparents and watching, when I was quite young, a series of very old season review videos, that taught me about the history of the club, that showed me Kerry Dixon, that showed me Pat Nevin, that showed me, you know, Ruud Gullit, that showed me eras of Chelsea before I was a Chelsea supporter. And do you know what that does? That enriches, that should enrich your connection to your club. I don't understand how that's seen as a negative. And I think, in a sense, it's like, this is going to sound quite blunt, but I feel like yesterday, a lot of people just told on themselves in terms of the shrug of the shoulder about it. Like, to me, it just kind of reflected that there are some people just, let's be blunt about it, because I think it's better to be blunt about it. People just don't give a shit about certain parts of Chelsea's history. And they make that abundantly clear. Like, that does not come into the equation of what they value as a Chelsea fan. And I'm not saying that you're not allowed to do that. You go and do that if you want. But I think a lot of us are quite baffled by that approach, because it just seems quite the antithesis of what being a supporter of a club is. And again, that's not local. You have people who live in New York, you have people who live in Brazil, you have people who live in Nigeria, who are far and away, who've never, because, you know, finances or whatever, have never been able to get to a game, but they care about the club and they love the history of the club and they appreciate the history of the club. So again, it's right to point out, this is not a simple black and white. You come from, like, I'm lucky that I grew up in West London, right? Chelsea, my local club. But that doesn't mean I'm the only one who gets Chelsea. I'm the only one who appreciates history. No, you can be as far away from Stamford Bridge, from SW6 as possible, and you can have an appreciation for Chelsea's history. And if you're young and you haven't, like, there's nothing against you. Like, just, you know, if you're interested, go and read it, because it's interesting stuff, and it ties in. You know, Ruud Gullit in particular is quite a special name, because he kind of, as the blueprint demonstrates, is kind of a turning point in Chelsea's history, and kind of narratively it leads up to Abramovich. It leads up to where Chelsea then become what they are known as today. Bowley, and this is something I had an exchange with someone on X about this, right? It is true that if Chelsea weren't in the position they're currently in, a quote like this would not resonate the way it does. Because if Chelsea were competent in transfers, if they had a club that seemed to value its history, that was connected with its supporter base, on a consistent basis. Quotes like this would not resonate. You know, individually, you can say, is this the end of the world? An owner of a club, a foreign owner of a club, doesn't understand the club's history. Is that the most novel concept? Have we seen it before? Yes, we have. However, it's about perspective. It's about perception. It's about what people think about their club at the current point and why it speaks to something else. And I say, whether that's true or not, and whether this conversation happened, my instinct is this conversation happened maybe shortly after the takeover, right? And maybe since then, Bowley has recognized that error and has an appreciation for Chelsea history. And, you know, as understands who that guy is, understands who a lot of the other legends in this club's history are. No issue with that, right? If you're someone who then takes that quote and cannot understand in any feasible way why it would irk some supporters, I find that quite baffling. Like, even if you don't think it's the biggest deal in the world, to try and act like Ruud Gullit is just some random guy is, I just can't believe people aren't just being disingenuous. Like, especially people of a certain age, I just don't believe people or people who have seemingly taken it upon themselves to become spin doctors for the club. So yeah, sorry for the long tangent, but it's not me being hostile to people who probably are listening to this right now, who are very, like, say both of us did not live through that era. And I, let's be honest, I don't have the same connection to Ruud Gullit as I do to Frank Lampard, for obvious reasons, because I lived through Frank Lampard at Chelsea. I lived through Eden Hazard at Chelsea. I lived through, you know, if you ask me personally, Diego Costa is a bigger hero to me than some of the older names in Chelsea history. And that's because physically, tangibly, I was there. And if you speak to an older generation, if you speak, you know, my dad, your dad, if you speak to, you know, my granddad, you know, you speak to older Chelsea fans, to them, the people they grew up watching probably still hold as much power in their lives as heroes, as meaning for them as an individual Chelsea fan, compared to the heroes we watch now. And to some younger fans, that probably baffles their minds, because they think, well, no, like, we won all these titles. But it's like, that's not how football works for supporters. Like, there is a lot of emotion. There is a lot of nostalgia. There is a lot of where you were at a place of time. And, you know, it isn't always about, you know, to Chelsea fans of an older generation, you know, not winning the Premier League was not seen as a massive failure. It was kind of just a regular case of Chelsea battling relegation. Yeah. You know, nearly being on the brink of extinction was kind of just how Chelsea were for a period of time. So, of course, in their perspective, those players were their heroes because that was Chelsea in their time. So, yeah, as always, there's a lot of nuance within these things. I just would like people who are good, you know, good faith, to appreciate not only the club's history, but why stuff like this just doesn't reflect well in the current era.
No, exactly. So, but to boil it down even more, right, if we use a non-football example, well, it's not a non-football example, but it's a local thing, right, as well. You could be in Guatemala. Let's go Guatemala. I only said Guantanamo then. Fucking Guantanamo, mate. You could be in Guatemala, right? And you could have watched your local team in Guatemala do something absolutely unbelievable, where you say that to somebody in Egypt and they'll go, oh, what's a big fucking deal, right? One of my favourite footballing moments ever, it's up there as one of the best days I've ever had around football, right, was when Imperial Wharf drew 4-4 with DT. And you were there, Dan, right? And as a day, like, everyone was feeling really shit because it was our third game. We'd been battered in two. We were going into this one. We were down again. It was, oh God, here we go. Like, this isn't working. What's going on? And all of a sudden there was this rally and everyone just comes together. It's like being part of that. Like, you saw people resonate with that online, by the way, obviously just taking the piss out of him, right? I'm completely getting that situation. Right. But as a group, everyone just pulled together and we just went for it. And it's one of those moments where that's a more micro scale. You take that and look at Chelsea. Chelsea's a global fan base. If you've supported the club for a long time, and I'm saying, like, this is where Dan made the point of Bowley saying sort of like it could be 3 weeks. It could be 3 weeks into the ownership when Bowley was sort of there going, I don't know who Rudehill is. Fine. Okay, cool, whatever. Let's not forget, by the way, that he was looking at buying Chelsea in 2019 as well. So, you know, putting that out there.
Yeah, I mean, in context, like, it's not some guy that just fell out of the sky. Like, it's not a Roman, it's not the Roman Abramovich situation where Roman literally was on his way to somewhere else and then picked up Chelsea.
Yeah, well, this is it. This is it, right? So, in this position, right, if you've been supporting the club for a while, learn your history. It's very important. And the history is pre-2003, which, by the way, the fact that that's been a running joke about Chelsea fans since then. And then we're sitting there now saying about people who support the club as well. Chelsea has been around a while, guys. Let's get the education, right? And if you want more education on football, come watch Imperial Wharf and we'll give you an education about that club as well. But, you know, that's another conversation for another time. But, Dan, we should probably move on. We could go down this rabbit hole for ages. And to be honest, I think we should. But I'd actually like to go down this rabbit hole with people who are there as well. So that's something for you and I to discuss off mic, because obviously there are things to go through with that. But with Chelsea's next game, obviously playing Liverpool, massive, massive game, as you said, a real opportunity to take a scalp. We should probably go through the Echo 11. But let's talk about the importance of this fixture first, because Liverpool are going to have made some changes. Arnie Slot's already come out and said, look, like, there are going to be changes to the squad, but not too many. So still going to see a pretty strong Liverpool side. Been on the piss all week, but realistically, they're still going to want to come and win at Stamford Bridge. With Brentford taking a scalp out of Nottingham Forest, Chelsea, as of recording, now sit level on goal difference with Forest. Sorry, level on points with Forest, have a better goal difference. I believe it's 6 goals now, or 7, where we're actually leading them. How important, with the running that Chelsea have as well, obviously, we've still got to play Forest. We're playing Liverpool. We've still got to play Newcastle. You know, we're playing Manchester United as well. How important is it that Chelsea realistically pick up maximum points?
It would be huge. I was having this conversation after the Everton game with someone that I think psychologically the boost this could have for not only Chelsea, but their rivals in Champions League qualification could be massive. Because what you could suddenly have on Sunday evening a situation where Chelsea have finally beaten someone good, which we've been waiting to see for a very long time. And the boost that will have inside Stamford Bridge and for Maresca and for his players, what that means for the table, and then also what that means for the rivals, because suddenly, probably, I could imagine for Forest, for Newcastle, for Man City, they probably looked at Liverpool at home as a game. Well, Chelsea are not going to win that, right? Like, you know, that's not maximum points. And then suddenly, if you pick up maximum points, like when you don't pick up maximum points when you're expected to, how it can work the other way, like with Chelsea failing to beat Ipswich and obviously last night Forest losing at home to Brentford, is momentum such a big part of football, as we know. Like, it's these fine margin things, right? And momentum can carry you a lot of the way. Momentum kind of carried us through the end to last season under Pochettino. We've seen it so many times. And I just think that this game I've looked at since the international break, as bigger than I think people think it is, because maybe they'd already resigned themselves to the fact that Chelsea can't win this game. And I always look, and I'm sorry if people have heard me say this on my channel or heard me say it on podcasts, preview podcasts for this season, is I look at these big games always as opportunities, as not moments to be fearful. Like, these are, and we you get many in the season, but this is one in particular where maybe, just maybe, the shift in momentum in terms of how the league table looks, Chelsea winning, how many is it now? Three in a row, isn't it? Yeah, 3 in a row. And Liverpool maybe coming into the game not as vibrant and intense as they were a week ago, because we always see it with teams, right? They've just won the Premier League. Maybe that momentum and kind of the jubilation that's come from that. You always see a drop off. Like it happens most. It's hard sometimes to quantify how big that drop off is, but you expect a drop off. And maybe, just maybe, this is the right time. And I kind of think if Chelsea win on Sunday, it sounds silly because it's only one game, but I have to say, I can't see a situation, because of how big I think Sunday would be, if Chelsea win, where if Chelsea win, they then don't go on and secure Champions League qualification. I think the wave of momentum that would be created by beating Liverpool on Sunday would be huge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I hope the players see it as, right? I hope they see it as, and Maresca sees it as, the opportunity, because I think it would win a lot of people back over. Because it would be seen as beating the Premier League champions. It would be seen as beating a big team, which we haven't done. For Maresca, it would be seen as, you've, in the space of a couple of weeks, you've gone from your season basically looking over to being revived to then beating someone big. I don't just think Chelsea should look at this as like, well, you know, if we don't get beaten, that's kind of, you know, it's not the end of the world. I'm not saying if we draw on Sunday, it's the end of the world, but you think about those extra 2 points. You think about what psychologically that does inside Stamford Bridge, and the noise that will be created inside Stamford Bridge if we win. I think we've been clamoring for this big win for so long, right? And yeah, you kind of just think the laws of football, like one of these days, one of these games is going to turn around in Chelsea's favour. Like, surely at some point it's got to happen. And I hope that that can be created on Sunday. And then, even this version of Man United, being Man United at home is a big thing still as a Chelsea fan, right? Like it, and then what it does is it propels you into hopefully having no drama against Joe Gordon on Thursday. And then you go Newcastle away. And what I think happens then for that Newcastle game is it maybe the pressure isn't as intense on Chelsea if they go into that game against, because you don't know what happens with Newcastle. Newcastle could drop some points. And in a dynamic of that game, which I think a few weeks ago looked like doomsday for Chelsea, I still kind of fear going to James Park. I need to see what Chelsea do on Sunday before. I think if Chelsea do what they have done for a long period of time and fail in these big games, I think psychologically, then yeah, it's, and I talk about psychology a lot because I think it's kind of underrated in the modern game. I think it's, you know, the more I read about football, the more I watch football. I'm not saying tactics don't matter, individual quality of players don't matter. Obviously, that's foolish. But, you know, a small example, look at Jackson's finishing over the past two games. You would not know.
Oh, that second goal, spectacular. Yeah.
You would not know that guy hasn't scored a goal since December. And then he turns around against Everton. He whacks one into the bottom corner. And then a few nights later, he's chasing down loose balls that probably 9 times out of 10, you aren't going to get. But then it creates a goal. And then a few minutes later, he's turning onto his left foot and he's smashing the ball in the top corner. At this time of the season, if you start getting players doing that sort of thing, it's like, you know, as we see, it's like a ball, right? It's a wave of momentum. And I hope that that can be created. And I actually think the atmosphere inside Stamford Bridge, for the Spurs game and even for the Everton game, I was quite surprised how actually positive the atmosphere was for a 12:30 kickoff, which sometimes can be quite low key.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, look, I think it's fair to say that, you know, look, you and I have said all season, we probably aren't the biggest Maresca fans, right? I think that's fair to say. But we've also said, should he secure Champions League and win the Conference League, you know, that gives him the time, right? That absolutely gives him the time. I remain a staunch disliker of Enzo Maresca's football. But if he gets a result against Liverpool, I tell you what, fair enough. that's all I'd say is that, fair enough. You know, let's just hope we can get the job done and he can deliver. But yeah, you're absolutely right that the ball will get rolling. So hopefully Chelsea can secure all 3 points against the champions, unfortunately, I have to say it as it is. But Dan, let's get into the Echo 11 before we wrap up. And I think it's important to go through it one by one. I'm going to say something different about a goalkeeper.
I thought you were going to give some praise to Rob Sanchez there for a second.
I know he got his praise after the Everton game. He got that. He got that on final score. I was like, you know what? Fair enough.
That's enough.
You know, exactly. It is enough. He's not. He's three good saves aren't going to make up for the absolutely torrid season that he's put us through. So fair play. Well done. But I'd like to see Philip Jorgensen be given a chance again, because I tell you what, for a man who had very little to do against Djurgården, or however you say it. This is why I said
originally I said Djurgården, and then on TNT commentary, they were they stressed how it was like Djurgården. So that's why I'm going. And to be fair, I got a very nice comment from a Djurgården fan on my YouTube video. So I feel like it's fair to give them. And their atmosphere was brilliant. So I'm going Djurgården.
So for what Philip Jorgensen did against Djurgården, I'd like to see him be given the opportunity in net. People can say Rob Sanchez was great against Everton. Yeah, he was. Still don't trust him. And I think Philip Jorgensen looked far more capable just based off the fact that when he was called upon, which was very infrequent in that game, he was sharp. He was on the ball. And I very much like that about him. And his distribution actually looks all right. So I'd like to say Philip Jorgensen in goal. Obviously, it would normally be Marcus Bettinelli. But Dan, where are you? If your head's still with Betts, we can stick with Betts.
Unfortunately, yeah. No, I do like your argument about Jorgensen. I've even heard, I think it was Nazar Kinsella. I should look into this. But Sanchez has picked up an injury, apparently. I'm pretty sure I heard that. But in terms of Jorgensen, yeah, like, given this is a guy who hasn't had a lot of football kind of all season, but especially in recent weeks, and when you're given the Conference League games, like, people don't really take your performances that seriously because of the level. I'm actually writing about this on Substack, but, like, it's kind of weird. The Conference League is very weird for Chelsea this season, kind of the imbalance of seriousness between how people look at the Premier League games and in the Conference League games. But, yeah, he did make some big saves in that game, and I still kind of think, from everything you're kind of hearing, that Jorgensen is going to stay. So it's kind of, there's probably some benefit to giving him some minutes to see if he can develop into a better keeper.
Yeah. And I do think that he should be going in net. So we've got Jorgensen as our keeper. Back four, I think, stays the same as the Everton game. So we go Kukurea, left back. Right back, we go Reece. Two centre-halves, we go Cole Will, and we go with Trev, right?
But the thing that, no, because that, if you remember, the Everton game, Reece didn't start. Maresca did his Caicedo right back slash central midfield, and he played Romeo Lavia, which I kind of think, I think he might go Lavia again, actually, because I could see how Lavia could really impact this game, especially against the Liverpool side. But then I think what that probably means is that Caicedo, he doesn't really do all three of Fernandez, Caicedo and Lavia as midfielders. And then he puts a conventional right back. I don't think I've seen that from him this year, or at least for a very long time. So he seems to like this idea of Caicedo. The concern then is, as it kind of was, and it was exposed, I think, against Spurs earlier in the season, is if you don't have that natural right back there, the right centre back can be very isolated, and then you've got this problem where a team as good as Liverpool may find ways to get space down that left side, and it opens up space. So I my instinct is he's going to go Caicedo. I'd love to see Reece start right back in this game, because he also took Reece off at half time. I think that's quite notable as well. Like, he took Reece off at half time in the Conference League game, so maybe it is opening up the door for Reece to start a right back on Sunday. So I'm a little bit torn on what he's going to do, actually.
Okay. So let's not do what he's going to do. Let's pick our team. Are we putting Reece at right back? So I'm going Reece at right back. Okay, that's fine. And the midfield three then, do you go Lavia? Do you change it up? Do we go Lavia, Caicedo, Enzo? Or does someone drop out of that team because we need to fit Cole Palmer in at number 10 rather than putting him elsewhere?
Yeah, that's difficulty. I mean, I'd be quite interested on form at the moment. There is a bit of me that would like to see Lavia, Caicedo and Enzo as a midfield three, which would probably mean, based on form, can you believe I'm saying this against Liverpool? Well, there's two solutions here. Either you put Palmer right wing, or he doesn't start.
Do you drop Nonny? I don't think you can.
You can't drop. I wouldn't mind seeing Palmer right wing, and then you keep Nonny left wing. Because I was really impressed with Nonny in left wing. I think Nonny has to stay in the team. Nonny's our best winger this season. He continues to produce. He'll take on his fullback. And especially in a game where Chelsea will have opportunity to transition probably more than they do against a lot of opponents. Yeah, I want Nonny in the team. So then probably what you've got is a situation where, I mean, we go back to where we started with Cole Palmer, which is he starts on the right, which I don't think I've ever seen Maresca do. He may have done it against like Inter Milan in like the preseason friendly.
Yeah.
Would a coach do that? Would he radically change things at this point in the season? I think that's what we have to, which is probably against our own 11. Like, that'd be interesting. I just think realistically, he ain't going to do it. Coaches are not going to do it usually at this time of the season.
No, absolutely not. I think that, yeah, he's chasing results. So that he'd gone the right in our team. And I agree with Nonny on the left, especially against Trent. I think Nonny would be really, really good against Trent. But realistically, he ain't going to do that, which means that someone is going to come out of this team. And I think realistically, if we're doing his 11, it'll be Romeo Lavia. I think the fact that Reece came up at our time, like you're saying, which is extremely telling, you'll see Lavia come out of the team, Caicedo go in there, Reece then become that extra player and that double pivot, which I think, which credit to Tom Masters, by the way, who raises for me. Chelsea looked far more capable with Lavia and Caicedo coming inside because it gave them two options in midfield, extra options, which that what he's given the credit for, which then gave the freedom for Cole Palmer to move a bit more. Having said that, I mean, I'm, again, square pegs, square holes kind of guy. And I think you saw Cole Palmer out on the right-hand side far more against Everton than you have for most of the season. He was given a lot more space to operate. And I think that that could be really important to seeing how Chelsea can really have an impact in this game. And I think him being able to sort of have that freedom to move against, you know, he's been tailing off a little bit this season, Andy Robertson. You know, he's not really been up to scratch in comparison to what he's normally like. I think having him not be basically occupied by Virgil van Dijk and whoever his defensive partner is going to be, because I think it seems to be quite a difficult one with Liverpool. And Gravenberch as well. I think it just gives him that freedom. So I'd like to see that personally, but I don't think we're going to get it. So our team would have that three, but realistically, I think it's probably going to be Lavia not playing. And it'll be Caicedo right back, Reece in the middle. Well, Caicedo defensive, Reece right back. And then you'll have Enzo, Cole Palmer, Nonny, Jackson, and I think you'll start Pedro Neto.
But yeah, Neto didn't play at all on Thursday, so he's kind of completely fresh. But yeah, I guess the team that excites me is, I mean, Madueke, I think, has to start no matter what the team is. I think Sancho's got a fair argument that, look, if you look at my recent performances, I've had more of an increase in my ability to, you know, get involved in goals. Enzo Fernandez too, obviously, has been contributing quite a bit recently from a creative aspect. I just think with Lavia, it's just kind of that press resistance kind of ability of him and his ability to play passes quickly between the lines against a team that's going to press you quite intensely. That could be instrumental, really. But as we probably know with Lavia, it was actually more than I suspected against Everton. He played up to 60 minutes, I want to say. It might have been more than that. Like, he actually played quite a bit, and he played nothing in midweek. So there is the opportunity for him to start this game and see how... Because there is... I wrote about this as well. Like, there is an alternative timeline, and we have this with many players at Chelsea. Reece James, Fofana, Kante, quite a few years ago, where it's like you theorize what Chelsea could look like if these players remain fit. And I think, you know, you think if Lavia is playing, I think Chelsea look like a more fluid football team in central midfield. But that does pose you questions elsewhere. And I think out of the two kind of experiments, I think it's more likely that Lavia doesn't start than Nonny going out left wing, because I think Nonny will find his way into the starting line. I'd be very disappointed if Nonny's not starting this game. And yeah, Jackson has to start. He's back in the goals. Why wouldn't you start him? And I kind of think just because he's Cole Palmer and he still is kind of creating opportunities, Palmer will start as well.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think that's probably what we're going to see. So it'll be interesting to see what Maresca does. Because I think it's fair to say that this season, watching him, it's never been square peg, square hole. It's been square peg, round hole into a triangle. So we'll have to see what happens with that game. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously Nicholas Jackson picks himself in that situation. And obviously Dan and I have given you the Echo 11 as well. Let us know your thoughts on who you'd like to see playing for Chelsea in this game against Liverpool. Of course, if you want to get involved after the game, make sure you head across to X and the Chelsea Echo to get involved with Final Score with the Score. And obviously Dan and myself will be releasing our voice note reviews after the game as soon as we possibly can. Chelsea, of course, hopefully, touch wood, on course for Champions League football. But that is it from Dan and myself. If you have enjoyed this episode and you're watching it on YouTube, please make sure you give us a subscribe down below. It really does help us out quite a lot. And of course, drop a like on the video if you are listening to this, of course, on all good audio platforms. Please, please, please give us a 5-star review and share it with your nan, your dog, and of course your hamster. That is that from me. Dan, anything you want to plug today? I'm feeling nice.
Yeah, Substack, YouTube, and this picture.
For our audio listeners, it is Diego Costa fighting a gorilla. So, on that, make sure you let us know who wins between one gorilla and 100 men. This has been the Chelsea Echoes preview of Chelsea versus Liverpool. We will see you after the game on Sunday. And, of course, see you for the preview of the next Premier League game. Take care of yourselves, guys. See you later.